Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. And Sean, we've got news, breaking news. Well, it broke a little while ago on Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day. Buffalo Sabres fired their coach, shook up their coaching staff. Ralph Kruger is out. Sean, how you doing? And your reaction?
I'm doing great. I love when the podcast is a companion to news. It's great. It's like talk radio without anybody talking to us, just amongst ourselves. But yeah, huge news, and we're gonna follow it up with guests. You know, we have the ability to do that, so we're gonna have Marty Biron on to talk about Buffalo, and we're gonna have Brian Compton on to talk about Anders Lee. And the Islanders came out today and said that Anders Lee is out for the rest of the season, including the playoffs, which is a huge blow for them. And Lou Lamoriello, their GM, talked about talked about what they might do on the market to try and correct that. And, you know, so once we get done with talking a little Buffalo, we'll probably talk a little trade deadline, less than a month away. So a lot of stuff going on, man.
Yeah. April 12th is the trade deadline, and it's certainly coming into focus for a lot of teams. GMs doing their midseason availabilities, talking about that. So we'll get to that in a second, but here's Buffalo. I mean, look, I'm not surprised. We'll have Marty Biron talking about this either. He's not surprised. I don't think anybody's surprised. They're 0-10-2 in their last 12 games. They've been outscored 49-19 in those games. Their power play is less than 10% in those games. I'm trying to think of the right word here that doesn't offend too many. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, it is. It's just been a mess there in Buffalo. Ralph, we've had him on the podcast. Terrific guy. We love him. You know, he's a terrific guy, but just didn't work out trying to get this done. And I look back, Sean, I mean, they were a 4-3-2 team on January 30th, right? So that's not great, but it's sort of maybe what we thought the Sabres would be, hanging around about 500. Since then, they're 2-15-2. And they've done this before, where they've gotten off to a decent start and just crumbled. That happened in 2018-19. They were 17-6-2, and then they went 16-33-8. Happened last season. They were 9-2-2. And I remember doing the podcast and saying, this is the year. The Buffalo Sabres are going to have it, right? And they went 20-29-6 before the pause after that. So we've seen it before, but this is, I think, worse. So I don't think it's any surprise that Ralph Kruger gets fired here. The question, though, is it the coach? Is it the players? I mean, you got to look at the players, don't you?
Well, of course you do. And let's just say that the spiral this time was not completely in Buffalo's control, right? They had the huge COVID outbreak.
Yeah.
They've had serious injuries to Eichel and, you know, other players, goaltending. And I think you look at all three of those years and depth is a problem. And what does every bad team have? They have no depth.
They have no depth.
When they get hurt, they're exposed for who they are as a franchise. And I think that's happened with Buffalo, you know, and I'll defend Ralph to the ends of the earth. Like he's never really had success in the NHL. He didn't really have success in Edmonton. I've been around him a lot. I went to Europe with him when the Sabres went there last year. It seems like 8 years ago, went there last year and played the Lightning. And, you know, you want to run through walls for that guy. I mean, I don't know. Maybe NHL players who are making millions of dollars don't want to run through walls, but they don't need inspiration. I do need inspiration. Like I need inspiration to do what I do every day. And, you know, that whole time I was in Sweden, like I was as creative as I could be. And I literally wanted to do everything because, you know, just listening to Ralph talk kind of made it that way. He's one of the most interesting men in hockey. I think, you know, if you want to make commercials about him, beer commercials about him, you could do it with Ralph Kruger. But you know, I'm disappointed, but then think about it. Like I was thinking about it. Jack Eichel came in 15-16, you know, he's already on his fourth coach.
Yeah.
He's already on his third GM. Like, and they weren't nobodies, right? Dan Bosman won a cup. He couldn't fix it. Phil Housley's in the Hall of Fame. He couldn't fix it. Ralph Kruger, you know, coached national teams to prominence, turned a soccer team from a laughing stock in England into a Premier League fixture in Southampton. He's a smart cat. None of them have been able to fix it. None of the GMs that have come through have been able to fix it. You know, Tim Murray, Jason Botterill, smart guys, and now it's on Kevin Adams, and he has to fix it. And I'm not sure what the answer is. And, you know, I just said I look for motivation, but I look at that Buffalo team and I wonder how they fix it. And maybe Kevin knows, and maybe he has a guy in mind, but it's going to be a special guy. But whoever it is, when they finally fix that, They want to put a statue of them up.
Well, no question. It's a great market. It's a, the hockey market there is fantastic. The fan base is passionate about the Sabres and just run down now. I mean, just frankly, just run down right now. But we'll touch a lot more on that with Marty Beer on here in a few minutes. He is one of our guests along with, as Sean mentioned, Brian Compton from our staff at NHL.com. But when you talk Sabres now, you obviously have to talk trade deadline, because it's coming into focus. As we said, April 12th is the trade deadline. Taylor Hall and Eric Staal are two pending unrestricted free agents. Frankly, and we'll touch on this with Marty, but I can't see Buffalo hanging on to either one of them. I think unless the market's just not there for them. But you got Kyle Dubas in Toronto saying, we're going to get somebody, right? You got Lou Lamoriello with the New York Islanders, and we'll hit on this with Brian Compton. Anders Lee is out for the season, so they need somebody at this point. I think the buyers and the sellers are starting to come more into focus too, Sean. So it's going to be an interesting deadline, because you've got the COVID ramifications, the quarantine issues and all that. But the teams that need are going to go out and fill their needs in whatever way they possibly can, in my estimation. I still think we're going to get activity around this deadline.
I do too, and I think it's going to be a mixture of chess masters and high-level poker players, because you're playing with parameters you've never played with before. You're playing with a flat cap. You're playing with quarantine issues. You're playing with GMs that want to get things done early, don't want to wait to the deadline. I mean, it's tight. You know, the deadline's in April 12th, and then, you know, there's less than a month before the regular season's over. So, you know, and the one thing I was thinking about the other day that we've never had before and is huge is college. These kids are going to come out now. These high draft picks, they're done before the trade deadline because of the way the season's been moved back. So if you got a big stud in college that wouldn't be available to you, he's available now. Even if he goes to the Final Four, he's available. So you know, that's just another layer that's been put into it, but it's the next 3 weeks are going to be absolutely insane.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And you look at some of the teams, Nashville, Detroit, New Jersey, Buffalo, I don't know about Ottawa, because I don't know what exactly they have to sell at this point. Well, what's going to happen? I mean, Vancouver's kind of right there, but are they really right there? Anaheim, San Jose is going to be interesting. There's a lot of teams there, I think, that have to look at it now and say, look, we've got to do what we can do for next season and beyond, because this season's just not happening. Because, and it was pointed out by Kevin Cheveldayoff, the Winnipeg Jets general manager, in the past, previous seasons, you'd have the wild card, right? So you'd have teams that were battling in there. And even if they were sixth in their division, they could look up at the other division and say, well, you know what? Nobody really there is fight. We got a shot here. Maybe we can push. It's top four in each division right now. That wild card doesn't exist. And I wonder what kind of wild card, no pun intended, it throws into the deadline and throws into what teams might be looking to do. But there's rental players available. The question, though, is there's a lot of teams right now, and Julien Brisebois of the Lightning brought this up, because they're one of them, that are in LTI right now, long-term injury money, right? So it's kind of a, for those teams, In a lot of ways, it's a cap in, cap out type of trade. So are we then going to see more hockey trades than rather than just draft picks? And as you mentioned last week, what about the draft this year? How badly do you want to, you know, attain picks in the draft this year when you're not doing the scouting that you normally do?
Well, and I think, you know, you look at what Kyle Dubas said when he said we need a forward. And the first question that was asked on the Zoom was, are you going to move a prospect to get him? He didn't even hesitate. Yes, I will move a top prospect. You know, maybe Sandin's off the table, but they have Robertson. They have a bunch of other guys that are coming. And that may be the price, right? You don't want a draft pick. You want somebody who you can look at playing in the AHL, playing in the NHL, you know, playing in Europe, wherever he is, where you can have some tape on him and you say, okay, I've scouted this kid for 3 years now. I scouted him through his draft years. I've seen him. Our pro scouts have seen him in the AHL or the NHL. We know what the proven commodity is. Like I said, it truly is going to be a deadline like we've never seen. And I think the really smart front offices are going to make hay here because of what's happening and the fact that everything's unknown, right? And I think those that have been through it numerous times are going to be able to pull on that experience and say, you know, when everybody's losing their heads, let's keep ours. and, you know, we're going to make out. Because if you go down to the end and a team like Buffalo, you know, just as an example, still wants to move their guys and they want to move them at all costs, now your cost has become almost nothing to get those guys. Yeah. So I really can't wait. You know, if you like intrigue, a lot of times, you know, we hype the draft deadline and it doesn't really come to pass. And I don't know what the numbers are going to be as far as trades. Like, I don't think there's going to be a record number of trades. And I think, you know, those trade deadline shows on TSN and Sportsnet,
some dead air on those.
There might be some, yeah. God, they'll be doing Team Canada projections for 2026 at some point. But the intrigue leading up to it and the possibilities of what could happen are going to keep us talking for the next month.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of those shows, if nothing's going on, they can just continue to break down the North Division because everybody watching is going to have an interest in it, right? There's, you know,
That's the other thing that I thought was interesting about the trade deadline is in the past, you know, if you're the Washington Capitals, you've played the Vegas Golden Knights,
mm-hmm.
and you know, all right, that Vegas team, they're going to be in it. You know, what do we need? What do we need that we don't have against these other top teams? You don't get that opportunity this year. You don't get to test your team against the Vegas, against the St. Louis, against whoever it is, you know, a Florida or a Tampa Bay, where you would in the past. It might only be two games, but a smart coach will know, look, I need a net front guy. I need somebody that can work the boards to negate this guy, you know, or a very specific, I need this guy to shut that guy down and we can get him cheap. So we're going to do that. You don't get that opportunity this year. You'll know those first two rounds, you'll know those teams intimately. And then you're just getting thrown into the Wild West. It's kind of like the World Series has been before interdivision play, where you just had no idea what you were going to draw in the World Series.
Yeah, no, but on the other hand, you know, like if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, the Minnesota Wild, Colorado Avalanche and St. Louis Blues intimately. And you got to win one round to get to the second. You got to win the second to get to that third round where you're finally seeing somebody from another division. And you could say, well, look, if we're going to play these guys, we need this. If we're going to play these guys, we need this. And so, you know, these guys are similar. We got to get something here. So in a way, it actually might benefit you because you're just playing those teams in your division and you know them so well to say, we've really struggled net front against this team. We got to fix that in order to beat this team. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. But then, you know, and that's your only goal. But what happens when you get to rounds 3 and 4?
Got to get there, man.
Yeah.
Gotta get
no,
there.
I understand. But in the past, you could at least measure yourself against the teams that you thought would be there. And then an 8 seed shows up and the team you built yourself to beat isn't there. So
true. Does happen. All right. One more thing before we get to Marty Beer on to talk all about the Sabres and their coaching change, their coaching shakeup with Don Granato is now going to be the interim coach and Matt Ellis and Dan Girardi going on the bench. Ralph Kruger out. Steve Smith, the assistant, out. Last thing before that, Alex Ovechkin, 718 goals, scored 718 from the office on a one-timer, which was not surprising at all. And it was a blistering shot. It was pretty awesome. Moved past Phil Esposito, Marcel Dion now in sight, 13 shy. Does he catch Marcel Dion this season?
No, I don't think so.
He's got goals in 4 straight, out of 6.
Yeah. Maybe he's getting hot but there was such a long stretch where he didn't score. I still think 13 and what do they have? 16 games left.
They got more than that.
26 13, games left.
Yeah. Somewhere along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. But there's another name on the list coming up. I think he's 2 away from Brett Hull for number 2 on power plays. And that goal last night was a power play goal, you know, and then it's Dave Andrechuk at number 1. And, you know, eventually he'll get there as well. And I think even without that, you know, that goal last night just proved like he's the greatest,
yeah.
the greatest power play goal scorer we'll ever see in this league. And I thought the really cool thing was they had a video of Phil Esposito, who he passed, who works for the Lightning, you know, and he's like, Alex, congratulations. You know, I can't believe that you can score, you know, in this league with all these players that want to block shots and wear special equipment, you know, kind of giving the dig into when he played, when nobody wore special equipment and everything else that happened. But, and then he's like, you know, I hope you keep scoring goals as long as it's not against the Lightning. But, you know, I mean, Phil Esposito, what a goal scorer that guy was. That was my introduction to hockey, right? With the Bruins is, you know, you drive around town and it was Jesus saves and Espo scores on the rebound, right? He was a very different scorer than Alex Ovechkin is, but yeah, equally adept and just brilliant. And now, you know, always ready to put him in the rearview mirror.
Well, he's actually one away from Brett Hull, 10 away on the power play goals, one away from Hull, 10 away from Dave Andrychuk. And they were talking about it. I think it was on the NHL Network that as long as he can get two legs to go over the boards, he's going to keep scoring goals because the shot's never going to go away. So really fantastic. 718 goals, four straight games with a goal, 5 out of 6. So I think he does it. I think he passes Marcel, or at least catches Marcel Dion this season. That's going to be another thing to watch in the second half. We'll talk a little bit more of the second half after this interview we got coming up right here. We were able to catch up with Marty Biron about the Sabres breaking news. So here is that interview with Marty Biron. Marty, thanks so much for jumping on with us on a crazy yet probably expected day in Buffalo at some point. What was your take on the move today by the Sabres to fire Ralph Krueger and rearrange the coaching staff a little bit?
Yeah, expected, Dan, is the word that comes to mind. We expected that could have happened 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, maybe 5 days ago, or it could have happened in 2 weeks from now. Who knows, right? So I think this is not a result from the fact that the Sabres lost to the New Jersey Devils on Monday night, or Tuesday night, I should say. They lost to Washington Monday 6-0. That's not a result of that. I think Kevin Adams is, I think Darren Dreger may have reported that Kevin Adams was meeting with ownership with Terry and Kim Pegula the last few days. And when you fire somebody, and in this instance, it's not just Ralph Krueger, it's also Steve Smith, assistant coach Steve Smith, you have to be 100%, because I don't know about you guys, but I've never fired anybody. And Kevin Adams has never fired anybody in a general manager role. So when you wake up in the morning and you feel this is the decision I want to make 100%, then you do it. But until you get to 100%, you can't really do it. If you're at 99.5%, you have to wait until you hit 100. So I think he met with ownership. They talked about it. He's a very methodical type guy. He needs to see what is ahead of him, and he probably wasn't sure how that was going to work. He came to a decision and he made the move. So I think that's really how it happened, but expected is the word that I should use here.
You know, you mentioned that he wanted to wait, he wanted to see what Ralph could do, if Ralph could pull out of it. And once it happened, and even before it happened, all the players were saying, you know, we love Ralph, he's a great guy, he's the best coach I've been around, you know, his positive attitude, whatever it is. Yet he couldn't fix it. Is there a reason why?
Well, Ralph is a fantastic guy. Like, I have had many conversations with him, unfortunately not one-on-one or in person since the pause last March. But before that, I don't travel with the team a whole lot. Sometimes we go on the road to do our studio work, and the morning skate, it would take literally 25 minutes to talk to the play-by-play, the analysts, the studio guys. And having conversation with Ralph, I always felt refreshed. I'm like, wow, this is a great conversation. I feel like I could go play right now. But also what Ralph is, he he's very smart in a lot of different aspects of life, not just hockey, but he has been on the World Economics Forums and all of that. And those guys, it's the long game. It's not about getting rich quick. It's about how can you make sure that money and the economy and everything stays viable and get to the max peak in the long range. Well, in hockey, it doesn't work that way. Maybe Ralph's vision and his inner maybe a structure said, we're doing the right thing. We're going to keep teaching in the way that we're teaching, and I can see progress, but the results are not there. And the NHL and hockey and professional sports, for that matter, is a process. It's a result-driven kind of leagues. It's not about just the process. So I really think that Ralph internally, it may have had the right idea, and in the right system and in the right situation where you win, or at least you're in the pack, it may have worked. But the way the Sabres were going this year definitely was not the right approach, and something drastic needed to happen.
But you said it, in the right situation. If Buffalo was a team that a year or two ago was in the playoffs, and now they're in that sort of rebuilding stage, do you think that would almost be, not acceptable, but understood what was going on here? They have been in this tailspin for a decade now. Did that play a role in this as well?
I think it has, but maybe it not the role that you would anticipate. I actually think that it may have made the Pegulas and Kevin Adams wait a little longer because they have had, you know, from Lindy Ruff to Ron Rolston to Ted Nolan to Dan Bylsma to Phil Owsley and now Ralph Krueger, that's a lot of coaches in a short tenure as ownership here. And I got to give it to Terry and Kim Pegula, who are trying to find a solution. They did kind of the same thing with the Bills, right? As they got their feet wet a little bit. They tried to see what needed to happen. They even hired Rex Ryan, and that was a complete disaster, although everybody thought, well, this is gonna work, right? But when they found Sean McDermott and Brendan Bean, that's when it happened. That's when the Bills went in the right direction. They've tried to find that chemistry of coach, general manager, putting the right team in place to send the organization in the right direction. It hasn't happened. When Botterill hired Ralph Krueger, I thought they had what needed to be, because I thought these are very two smart people that can get the organization in the right direction. And last season did not work out at all the way I thought it was going to work out. The moves weren't made in the way I thought they were going to be made. So I could see why they quickly changed and went to Kevin Adams. And I could see why now they're quickly changing and going to go in a different direction. Because until you find the pieces that work, you have to constantly be evaluating and see what you can make the organization better.
You know, I thought today that Kevin Adams conducted himself well in the press conference. He took a lot of hits, put a lot of blame on himself, said it wasn't good enough. The one place where he was a little circumspect is what's next for this team. What does that next coach look like? What characteristics does the guy have that's going to pull him out of this? You're around that team a lot. What do they need in a coach?
Well, first of all, Kevin Adams listens to the Instigators with Andrew Peters, Craig Irvin, and myself a lot, because when they asked him about a new coach, he says, well, I'm not going to go in, you need this or that or this or that. And that's a segment I do, this or that. So here you go, Kevin. You listen to what we say.
He's stealing your shtick.
He's stealing my stuff, right? This is trademarked, by the way, so don't go stealing it, Kevin. But he's going to study. He's going to evaluate. There's obviously some top-notch prospects, well, coaches, I can't even call them prospects, that are or may be available, right? Two that come to mind are Bruce Boudreau and Gerard Gallant. I have been a fan of Gerard Gallant for years. When Florida let Gerard Gallant go, I said, here your Golden Knights coach coming up, and he took the job, and then he went on, and when Vegas fired him, I thought, there's Seattle's new coach in a couple of years. Well, maybe a Buffalo team comes in ahead and says, we got to get our coach right now because there's going to be other opportunities this summer. And there may be some really good ones that coaches will want to get to. So, this is going to be a really interesting process for Kevin Adams. You're right. I thought he handled the media well. I thought he did that 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago when he said, that's unacceptable. I am frustrated with what's going on. And you can feel the passion. Now, he also has to hold himself back a little bit because he can't just go, you know, John Tortorella on everybody, and that wouldn't be good. You're a general manager. You have to conduct yourself in a certain way, but you can feel the passion and the anger and the hurt as well from where it started when they signed Taylor Hall and acquired Eric Staal to where it is now, where it's like, well, we might as well sell everything because that's where we are right now.
So I wanted to ask you this then. You mentioned a couple of the players. I mean, we can get into deadline stuff and rental players and whatever it may be. But there's a couple of guys there who have, you know, you have some core players in Buffalo, and they get a little success at the start of the season and they can't sustain things along those lines. If you're a coach now, looking at the players that are there currently, the core players that are there as we speak, it's one of 31 jobs, almost 32. I get that. Is it a good job for a coach right now?
I think it's a good job. I think any coaching job in the NHL has its challenges, but it is a really good job. Number one, it has an incredible fan base. Now the fan base is frustrated, no doubt about it, but it is an incredible fan base and they will support you when things go well, which I was a part of in the 2005, 2006, 2007 seasons here in Buffalo. It was incredible. Lindy Ruff, who hasn't coached as a head coach in the National Hockey League since Dallas and then now New Jersey, people still talk about Lindy Ruff as he's one of the greatest head coach in the history of the NHL, right? Because he had success here and he will always be loved. And he was a blue collar type coach and he represented the city and the fan base well. And I think this is a great opportunity for somebody to come in and do just that. Now, it has its challenges. One, how do you find more offense? Because it seems to be the problem every year with the Buffalo Sabres. You have great players. Jack Eichel is a top five, top 10 player in the National Hockey League. Obviously, hasn't played to that level this year, and there's many different reasons why that has not happened. And he's hurt right now, and who knows when he's going to play again. But Jack Eichel is a phenomenal talent. Sam Reinhart is a phenomenal talent too. You know what you're going to get from Sam Reinhart in the good years and the bad years, and he's pretty consistent. That's a great talent. You have depth. You have youngsters. You have Dylan Cousins. You have Jack Quinn, who's going to be coming up in a couple of years, probably. You have Rasmus Dahlin on defense, who's regressing, but you know the talent is there. You know the ability, the vision, the stick handling, everything's there. You have Linus Ullmark in net. This is a little bit of a question mark, but only because he hasn't been able to prove that he's a number one guy, because last year he got hurt, then there was a pandemic, and this year he got hurt again. So, but I think the talent is there. So there's many strong pieces in your locker room on the roster. It needs somebody that's going to come in and demand really a lot out of these players and push them to a place where they've never been pushed before. I think that's the kind of guy that needs to come here in Buffalo.
And the core that's gone, that young core that's gone through so much disappointment, so much losing, can they be saved? Can they do it here? As a GM, do you have to start thinking about loading up by moving them?
I think they can. And why I'm saying that, and one guy that I will single out is Rasmus Ristolainen. Ristolainen's been here for so many years. I don't even know the number of years now. And he's been losing year after year after year after year. And for the last few years, I'm thinking, we got to trade Rasmus Ristolainen. The Sabres have to move the big number 55. Teams are going to want a right-handed physical defenseman, and you can get a lot for him. And I've been kind of questioning his play, his awareness away from the puck. At nights, he shows up. Some nights, he doesn't. I've even used on the air, I love Risto, I hate Risto. I love Risto, I hate Risto. Like, it's like the bipolar aspect of it, right? But what I've seen this year out of Rasmus Ristolainen, especially at the start of the season with Jake McCabe, that was a top pair in the National Hockey League. They were that good together. Jake McCabe gets hurt. Now Risto's lost again. But I've seen it, even though he's been losing for many years, I've seen what maybe a new culture or a refreshed attitude can do. I think it can happen. It's going to be hard. It's buried really deep. But I really think it can happen.
So then what do you need to see immediately, though, other than a win, which would break them out of this 12-game losing streak? But there's 28 games left. They're halfway through. They're not a playoff team. We know that. They have a lot of injuries that they have to deal with. What's a successful second half of the season for the Buffalo Sabres?
I'm not even going to count wins, losses, goals for, goals against. I'm not looking at numbers. What I want to see is urgency, speed, relentless pursuit of pucks. And nothing against Ralph and Steve Smith and the coaching staff, but I was at the morning skate Monday morning, and I've been at a lot of morning skates. You know, you can't really go to practices, and there's limitation with the protocols this year, but I watched the morning skate, and it was the same morning skate that they've done for the last year and a half. And I'm thinking, you've lost 10 in a row. Like, maybe the morning skate needs to be changed. I remember Mike Keenan back skating the Boston Bruins one morning, and I don't want Mike Keenan back in the league in that way, but I'm thinking some point you've got to maybe say, I'm going to change it up. And then the Washington Capitals came on the ice right after. And then their first drill of a morning skate, which is just 3-on-0 down the ice, it looked to me like they had more jump, more intensity, and more urgency in that one drill than I had seen in the 40 minutes before that with the Sabres. So that's what I want to see. And maybe everybody's frustrated and everybody is tired of losing, and I totally get that. But if I see urgency, speed, relentless work ethic, you know, guys maybe throwing 2, 3, 4, 5 body checks, out of character. We saw Dylan Cousins fight the other day. I don't need Dylan Cousins to fight, but I need to see a battle. I need the guys to be engaged in the fight. then I will see a step forward, because this year, even if they would have gone 4-8 in the last 12 games, but if I didn't see all those things, I think the move needed to happen anyway.
So take out your crystal ball now and tell me, when the trade deadline comes, is Taylor Hall still a Sabre?
In my crystal ball, I would say no. To be honest with you, I think this is maybe the perfect opportunity to sign him long-term. He's not had a great year. The team hasn't had a great year, but if he wants to stay, maybe you can get him in a little bit of a squeeze, knowing that the revenues and the hockey-related revenues and the cap is still not going to continue to go up. All of that stuff, the business of the game may affect what Taylor Hall might be able to do this summer. But I think the Sabres in the end are going to look to unload an Eric Staal, unload a Taylor Hall, unload maybe a Colin Miller or Brendan Montour. They're going to look at their unrestricted free agent this summer and try to get pieces, assets for those guys in return. So having said that, I think my crystal ball right in front of me right now tells me that Taylor Hall will be moved at the deadline.
Yeah, and if I'm Taylor Hall, I don't know that I want to re-sign if I don't know who the coach is going to be either.
That's a very, very valid point. Now, I think Taylor Hall had a really good relationship with Ralph Krueger, maybe one of the reason he came to Buffalo, dating back to his half season with the Edmonton Oilers. Maybe now Taylor Hall is like, yeah, that wasn't working. Well, maybe he says, I really love Ralph, and now I'm going to look for another opportunity. Who knows? But I think in the end, the Sabres can't really just do what Taylor Hall wants. The Sabres have to do what's best for them, and I think what's best for them is to get as much as you can for the guys that are going to be walking away, if they're going to be walking away anyway.
You've seen a lot of them, and I'm just curious, last thing on him, he gets traded and he goes to a team with 3-4 really good centers down the middle, a playoff team deep down the middle with centers. What does he do for that team?
Well, Taylor Hall, actually, he's not been bad this year. He's shown a lot of speed. He's created a ton of chances. But one thing I did not know about Taylor Hall, because I've not watched all 82 games a season of Taylor Hall with the Oilers, with the New Jersey Devils, with Arizona, he's not a goal scorer. Like, if he really was a goal scorer, a sniper, he would have had 75 goals in a season, because he has so many scoring chances in a game, breakaways. And I'm thinking, man, if he could just pot like two of those in, he scored 39 with the Devils, right? And everything must have been going in the net, because other than that, he's 20 to 25 goal scorer, and he probably would be a 40 plus if he could find some sense of a goal scoring touch. But he makes plays. He's fast. He's relentless on the forecheck. I love him for that, but he's not a goal scorer, and that's the point that holds him back a little bit.
Marty, really good stuff. Good insights, definitely, on the Sabres. We appreciate it. And by the way, yeah, when he scored the 39, he shot 14%.
Okay.
And his career is about 9 or 10. So a lot was going in for him at that point.
Yeah, 14% is a high number for Taylor Hall for sure. I would think, like, he's probably more of a 7-8% on a normal year. And then all of a sudden he has a good year, he's at 10%. But 10% is still very average when you consider the top players in the National Hockey League.
He's 2.8% this year. Not good enough for sure. That's a bit of an aberration. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Great stuff there from Marty Biron. Obviously knows a ton about the Sabres. He's attached to the hip with that team. And I think we've exhausted our Sabres coverage now on this podcast. We've got to see what happens from here, right, Sean? Just see where they go from here in the second half, which is what we're going to talk about right now. We got the second half right now. How about that?
Yeah, well, midpoint was Monday, right? I think because of the Blizzard game, it was actually the first game on Tuesday, but we can still say Monday. It was supposed to be the last game on Monday.
We'll say Monday. And obviously, if you haven't seen, you should check it out. We're running our Trophy Tracker series on NHL.com right now, looking at the midpoint here, who we think are the favorites for some of these awards. And, you know, look, some of the votes that we've had, Sean, they were close, very close. Some of them runaways, you know, I mean, like Kaprizov, it's a runaway for the Calder Trophy. Lankin and Stutzel have been good, but I mean, you got to give it to Kaprizov, right? I mean, he's changed the Minnesota Wild. I think he's just completely changed the complexion of that team.
You just brought this up because you know I'm the only one that didn't vote for Kaprizov.
I actually didn't. Are you the one? You voted for Lankinen?
I did vote for Lankinen. Oh, I'm a goalie guy, part of the goalie union. But I look, that Chicago team, they were supposed to be a train wreck. And part of the reason why they're not a train wreck is because Lankinen has been so good.
How could you go against Kaprizov? Come on.
It's partly best. And I think it's harder to be a goalie. Like Kaprizov's an older guy, right? He's got some chops in the KHL. What has Kevin Lankinen ever done?
Nothing. Right? He was good at an international level.
But not he doesn't have the same resume as Kaprizov coming over to North America. And this is nothing against Kirill. He's the most exciting rookie there is, right? And I have no issue with that. But I think if you're awarding a rookie of the year, I think you have to put a lot into it. And it's not just skill. It's kind of making that same argument, right? About the Hart Trophy. Is it the MVP or is it the best player? Is this the most important rookie or the best rookie, or is it a combination thereof? And I made it a combination thereof. And I think it's harder to be a young goalie in this league with no experience and no resume than it is to be a goal scorer in this league with no resume or experience.
All right. So, but is Lankinen even the best rookie goalie, or is it Kaapo Kähkönen from the Minnesota Wild at this point now, as we talk?
Well, when we voted, which was last week, I thought it was Lankinen, and I might be convinced otherwise now, and that it's Kähkönen. He's won 9 in a row and he's been ridiculous. I had him fourth, I think, or third. I had Stutzel in there pretty high. And then kind of went from there.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like I've been so sold on Kaprizov. I don't even think I had Kähkönen in my top five. I certainly would have him in there if we were doing it right now. The goals against in that 9-game winning streak, I'll give you the rundown. 1-1-2-2-3-1-0-3-0. Right. So he hasn't given up any more than 3. He's given up 2 or fewer in 7 of the 9 wins, 1 or fewer in 5 of them. So he's been terrific. So, all right. So he got there. The Calder was a runaway in our voting for Kaprizov, as I think it should be. So was the Norris. The Norris was a runaway, really, for Victor Hedman. I don't think we have much debate there. Drew Doughty's been really good. Petrie's been good. Ekblad's been good. But it's Victor Hedman. I can put him in the Hart Trophy conversation if you want here.
Yeah, no, he was universal. Even I couldn't go against the chalk on that one. I think he's the best player in the NHL right now, regardless of position.
Yeah, you might be onto something there. You might be right. He's obviously not the flashiest, the fastest or anything along those lines, but for everything he does for that team, it's hard to argue that somebody does more for their team than Victor Hedman does. He leads them in scoring. I mean,
and it's hard to argue that there's anybody better at their position,
right,
than Victor Hedman is at his.
So the Vezina vote was tight. That one was, I was actually surprised at how tight it was. There was 17 of us voted. There were 10 first place votes for Vasilevsky and 7 for Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury's had a terrific season. Vegas has been really good. Obviously, we know how good Tampa is, but I thought it would be more of a runaway for Vasilevsky, just because he's playing all the time. And I guess Fleury's playing all the time now too. But there's so much love out there for Marc-Andre Fleury, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think that's a huge part of it, right? It's people have feelings and people have allegiances, but I don't know how much that plays into it. Like I had Marc-Andre Fleury first, and I just think again, like he's been as good as Vasilevsky, and Vegas is a good team, but they're not in the same boat as the Tampa Bay Lightning are. Marc-Andre Fleury has a couple of good defensemen in front of him. He doesn't have Victor Hedman in front of him. I think he's had the best year as a goalie, and part of it is just sentimental in the fact that he wasn't supposed to do this. He was supposed to not be there.
Yeah.
They're going to run him out of town. Robin Lehner was the guy. Robin Lehner. We signed Robin Lehner. He's our playoff goalie. He's the man. We don't need Marc-Andre Fleury anymore. That the sword was in his back. He was told to pack his bags and get out. And, you know, that would have caved in a lot of athletes. A lot of athletes would have said, you know, especially when they got tapped on the shoulder and they said, you know what? Robin's hurt. We don't know when he's going to be back. And that's all yours. There's some guys that would be like, oh, okay. Well, you didn't need me before. I guess you don't really need me now, right? And they would pout and they would do whatever. And Marc-Andre didn't do that. And I don't think it's in his DNA. It's never been, even as ugly as things got in Pittsburgh before he left and how badly he wanted to be in that crease and he couldn't be. You know, he always smiled. He was always good with his teammates, always kept things light in the room. And to me, that all plays into it. And that's nothing against Vasilevskiy. What a fantastic goalie he is. But I just think Marc-Andre Fleury's had a year for the ages.
Yeah, he's been terrific. Dude, I had Vasilevskiy at number one, Fleury number two, by the way.
Well, everybody pretty much did. You know, it was those two. And, you know, I do all the math for this and nobody can see the Zoom that we're on right now. But it'd go a long way into explaining my gray beard and long hair. Is I went into journalism because I was told there would be no math. And all of a sudden I have 17 people picking five different people and spreadsheets and you know, 155 voting points. And, you know, there, as long as my hair is, a lot of it was pulled out over the last week. And but the goaltending one was simple. It was like seven guys. And, you know, it was the for almost everybody, it was the same five guys. You got a couple of the rookies in there in Kokkonen and Lankinen. Gibson got one vote. I think that might have been a sentimental vote. And Anderson got a couple of points. But it was Vasilevskiy. It was Fleury. It was Varlamov. It was Grubauer and his Hellebuck, you know, and it was three, four and five were in all different orders. But the top two, almost everybody, you know, got a first or second place vote between Vasilevskiy and Fleury.
Yeah. And I think I had Hellebuck in there just because he was, I mean, for what he's facing there in the North Division for the numbers aren't like what they were last year for Hellebuck when he won it, but for what he's facing there in the 1980s division, I mean, it's pretty good. You know, what about Hart? Because that's always a great debate. And look, I'll say it. I had Patrick Kane for the Hart Trophy. And I think without him, and you can make a case for Lankinen too, there's no question. But without Kane, I don't know that the Blackhawks are even sniffing the bubble with the season that he's had. He has been dynamic for them in so many different ways. The one thing, and we talked about Victor Hedman. I love Victor Hedman, but he does have Vasilevskiy. He does have Braden Point. He does have Steven Stamkos. He does have Mikhail Sergachev and Ryan McDonagh, and that's a great team, and he's a great player. Kane's in many ways dragged the Blackhawks into the fight this season with what he's been able to do. And you can make a case. He's had so many great seasons with everything that they have dealt with everything going on externally and internally with that team, not having Taves or Doc or, you know, this might be his best season yet.
It is his best season. Who's getting him the puck?
That's my point. I don't know. That's it.
Like he has to do everything himself. And you know, it was closer than I thought it was going to be. Like I thought Kane was going to be a runaway and it ended up being like 74 to 65 and 10 first place votes to six. And McDavid was number two. And Connor McDavid's the best player in the league, you know, and Daryl Sutter came out, you know, after two games behind the bench and said, you know, to set up the Battle of Alberta, Connor McDavid is head and shoulders better than any player in this league. And he's right, but that doesn't make him the Hart Trophy winner. That makes him the best player in the league. And he could be player of the year. And, you know, if you want to say that the NHLPA trophy is the best player in the league, the Hart Trophy is the player most valuable to his team. And I don't know that Connor McDavid's in the top three because of Leon Draisaitl, right? Like I couldn't believe that Kopitar didn't get more love with the Kings. And look, they've struggled in the last week. And
I had him second. I had Kopitar
the bloom's second. Off, but it was me and you and not a lot of other people.
Yeah.
We were he got 3 second place votes. And almost nobody else voted for him. He ended up with 26 points. He ended up behind Austin Matthews, who had 28. And I find that shocking. And again, I'm an MVP. Like, who's the guy? Who's the guy that your team can't live without and wouldn't be where it is if he wasn't there? And the Edmonton Oilers might be right where they are without Connor McDavid.
I don't know that Edmonton would be third in the North Division as they sit today, Wednesday, when we record this, but they would be in the fight probably, you know, I mean, because they do have Draisaitl, you know,
and they have Nurse who's having a
terrific season. Yeah.
And they have Mike Smith who's, you know, reviving himself again and reinventing himself again. They have the pieces there to be competitive. I don't know that the Los Angeles Kings do. And I know that the Chicago Blackhawks don't.
Well, yeah. And so that I wanted to last point before we get my last point before we get to Brian Compton and talk a lot about the Islanders in the East Division is on Kopitar, right? So we talked about this. You just said, you know, McDavid's got Draisaitl, right? Of the guys who are in front, Kopitar is currently 12th in the league in scoring with 32 points as we speak today. Of the 11 players in front of him, McDavid and Draisaitl are two of them. Marner and Matthews are two of them. You know, Barkov and Huberto are two of them. And then the others, Backstrom, well, he's got Ovechkin, right? Marchand, well, he's got Bergeron and Pasternak. Scheifele, well, I mean, he's got Ehlers and Wheeler and, you know, Connor. And Stone, well, I mean, he's got Pacioretty and a number of others. Then there's Kopitar. And who else does he have? You know, like that's kind of to your point, right? I mean,
yeah.
Who else does he have? And Kane. Who else does he have? I mean, Kane's got DeBrincat, but without Kane, DeBrincat doesn't have 29 points this season. So I think that's how you kind of have to look at it in that sense too. And that's why I had Kane one and Kopitar two.
You know, and there were a couple of people, and everybody has their own MVP vote. It's kind of like, it's one of those really subjective things you look at, and you can do whatever you want, and you should never pass judgment on somebody else. But like, you can't have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on your ballot. If you're picking five guys, those two guys cannot be on the ballot together as MVPs. Like, that's goes against the whole rule of MVP dumb. You're the most valuable player. And, you know, like, I would have loved to have put Drew Doughty on mine, but I couldn't because I think Kopitar is the most valuable player on that team. And like, Drew, you want to talk about people that aren't getting any help? Drew Doughty's playing with Mikey Anderson, who was actually on my Calder ballot, and I might have been the only one. The kid's playing 23 minutes a game, but Drew Doughty is carrying that blue line like nobody's business. And, you know, I think we've said this once before on the podcast, and if we haven't, I'm going to say it now, and if we have, it deserves to be said again. There is nothing better in the NHL than a pissed off Drew Doughty.
Yes, he's terrific. And there was
because he will stick it in your face every chance he gets, and then he'll tell you about it when he's done sticking it in your face.
I think part of him being pissed off right now is there's, you know, the people who are putting out their Olympic teams if the NHL players go are not including Drew Doughty on the back end for Team Canada, which I think would be absurd. And he knows that, he reads a lot of things, and he knows that, and that pisses him off, so there's no question about it. So pissed off Drew Doughty's a fun hockey player. There's no question. A really good hockey player, too. All right, so let's get to Brian Compton. I was not able to do this. I forgot. We did record the interview already, and I forgot, but Brian Compton deserves to hear it. He put the Tampa Bay Lightning third in his Super 16 this week, and I can't believe he did it. So I think he's nuts. That's just me. It's not even a rant, but I'm going to put it out there just to let everybody know. Look for the Super 16 when it runs tomorrow. And the one guy who doesn't have Tampa Bay at number one is Brian Compton because he got him third.
Who do you have at one?
Vegas.
And then the Islanders?
No, and Florida.
Oh.
Yeah. Vegas, then Florida, then Tampa, which I thought was insane. But anyway, here's that interview with Brian Compton. Brian, thanks for hopping on with us, man. How you doing? How's say happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you guys. I'm a little tired, but I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I know Sean's good, you know, because it's St. Patrick's Day and he's excited. How are the Islanders, though? Are they good? I mean, they're pretty good, but how are they doing today?
They're playing very well. They received some bad news. I'm sure they've known for a few days, but Lou told us this morning that Anders Lee will not return this season. That includes the playoffs. So that's a huge blow for the Islanders. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks. They are playing very well. They had a really good first period last night, but the streak ended at 9 games. But we'll see what happens here moving forward.
Do you think they're the best team in the East right now?
Yes. Losing Anders is a huge blow. I feel a lot better saying that had Anders not been injured, but they're certainly the deepest, particularly down the middle. I don't think you get much better than their four centers. And their defense, knock on wood, has not been injured yet. They've played the same six guys throughout the whole season. We'll see what happens moving forward. But yeah, I think they're the best team in the East right now.
You think they're better than Washington? They can't seem to beat Washington. That's the issue, you know?
The first two in January, they hadn't really figured things out yet. And then they turned the corner in February. They haven't played them at home yet. How big of a difference does that make, especially without many fans in the building? We don't know. Like I said, I thought they got off to a really good start last night. I think they deserved a better outcome, particularly after the first. Samsonov was really good in the first, and then things just kind of fell apart for him.
So here's the question. You think they're the best team in the East. That makes them theoretically one of the four best teams in the NHL. Are they good enough to go to the Stanley Cup final? And I ask only because Anders Lee's hurt. And even when they had Anders, goals were hard to come by. And you look at last year's playoffs, they played Tampa Bay and what they scored, 12 goals in six games, and five of them came in one. Like, is this a team that's been built this way? Are they good enough to not have to squeak out 2-1 wins? And we all know that you can't do 16 of those in a playoffs.
I think they're better offensively, Sean, this time around. I mean, they have a handful of guys who have 8 or 9 goals. Anders had 12. They're not going to, you don't win games in the playoffs 6-5, but I don't think that they're afraid of getting into a high scoring game with the depth that they have. And the games that we've seen in the playoffs are the games you're alluding to. They're 2-1-3-2 games. They're built for that style of hockey. That's the way Barry wants it to play. So if they have to score goals, I think they can. And we'll see what Lou does here over the next few weeks, if he can acquire some more offense for him. And Oliver Wahlstrom, who we haven't mentioned yet, makes them completely different offensively, I think.
Yeah, I like him a lot, actually. I think he's coming around too. So now, but you mentioned it, Brian, like, okay, what is Lou going to do here? Rental makes the most sense for this team. It makes the most sense for a lot of teams, but with the flat cap being the way it is and teams wanting to build from within. We know they need some goals that, you know, or at least that would help, right?
Sure.
They lose a player in Anders Lee who has a unique skill set, though, right? I mean, he's got 12 goals this season, probably by a combined 20 feet from the net. Right. You know what I mean, this is he does.
Yeah.
So if you look at the market and you say, oh, well, Taylor Hall's out there, right? But he doesn't do what Anders Lee does. Correct. Kyle Palmieri, he doesn't do what Anders Lee does. So do they need to replace Anders Lee, or do they need a guy to come in that can score goals?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. You're not going to replace Anders Lee. You're just not, for everything that he does in front of the net, for everything that he does in the locker room. He's the leader of the hockey team. But this is a huge loss for them. Having said that, they have a veteran group who have been down this road before. They played, you know, they lost Adam Pellick last year for the remainder of the regular season. He was fortunate enough to come back after the return to play. I think Palmieri makes the most sense, Dan, because he's a versatile guy. He can play in all situations. Those are the guys that Barry Trotz loves. You can put him like a Pageau, who has fit in seamlessly with this hockey team. There's some familiarity there with Lou as well, with Kyle Palmieri. So I think he's a better fit. Taylor Hall is the most skilled. How does Taylor Hall mesh with Matthew Barzal? I don't know if that's a combination that's going to work. You need, you know, they're two guys that need the puck to be successful. So I think Palmieri makes the most sense here.
And I don't know that you need to fix fill the net front presence. You're just going to put Bellows there.
Who's been good.
He's been great. And he's making goalies crazy. I mean, you know, I watched the game the other day. About 13 people on the other team wanted to kill him at some point in the game. it was somewhat reminiscent of his old man, although he's probably not as skilled as his dad yet.
His dad was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just in front of the net, hacking and whacking all the time. And clearly a player who's got it now, right? Who understands, hey, if I'm going to play, I'm going to have to get punched in the face 3 times.
And he's going to have to play a certain way away from the puck. That's Barry's biggest thing, right? If you're not going to pay attention to the smaller details, you're just not going to play. That's just the way Barry Trotz coaches. That's why Oliver Wahlstrom really didn't play at the start of the season. He's starting to get it now. So Kiefer's not afraid to go to the net. The way he took over that third period in New Jersey on Saturday was really, really impressive. Can he do that against the upper echelon teams in the East? They're moving forward. We'll see. And if he can't, I think Lou's going to go out and get somebody here. We'll see.
Are we looking a little too pie in the sky at times? I mean, we talk about Taylor Hall or Kyle Palmieri. What about like an Eric Howla or a Mikael Granlund, you know, from Nashville, these types of players who are not necessarily the big names that could be available, but seem like they would fit with a Barry Trotz style. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I just think that they have enough depth guys like that, Dan, where I don't know if that makes sense. If you're not going to get a Hall or a Palmieri, I don't know if you bother doing anything, to be quite honest. I just don't think those other guys make a whole lot of sense with the guys that they have. We'll see what Bellows does here moving forward. But I think the big thing here is that it really does have to be a rental unless there's other players involved in this type of trade. I know fans have been screaming at me about Philip Forsberg. With another year on his contract, the owners have to sign Adam Pellick and Anthony Beauvillier after the season. I just don't know how you can fit a guy in like Philip Forsberg when Anders Lee comes back.
Well, I don't know if you have to sign a forward that's up if you get Forsberg and he has another year left. I mean, he's head and shoulders above almost everybody on that roster.
Agreed, but Beauvillier still has years left before he becomes UFA. I don't think that they're going to – I think they'd rather keep Anthony Beauvillier than sign Philip Forsberg past, you know, next season.
But also there's a chemistry thing here too,
of
right?
Of course, it's enormous. It's enormous, Dan. Right. It plays the biggest role in why they are where they are. People underestimate that all the time, and that's why I was hell-bent on them getting a guy like Pageau, because he just had that feeling that he would fit in seamlessly. There's certain guys that won't adapt to the style that Barry Trotz wants you to play. Is Taylor Hall one of those guys? I don't know, but I'd be afraid to find out, to be perfectly honest.
And the prices, I mean, that's the other thing. Nobody knows. Like, at first we thought that the prices would be suppressed because of the flat cap and the inability to trade because of the quarantines. And now with injuries and teams coming out and saying, well, I need a forward. And being very open about it, right? The Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas comes out and says, I need a forward and I'd like to do it very soon.
Yep.
Now, all of a sudden, you know, Buffalo's sitting there and they're saying, I got a couple of forwards that you might be interested in. Let's start a bidding war.
Yeah, Tommy and Fitzgerald's where the numbers doing the go same thing, right? I mean, Fitzgerald's doing the same thing with Palmieri. A lot of teams are going to want to add guys like this. And that's, you know, fans are yelling, Lou's got to get this done. It's not that easy. I mean, there's a reason why GMs wait to pull the trigger, because they're going to hold out for the best deal that they can.
Yeah, this deadline is going to be even more fascinating because of everything, all the ramifications involved at the same time too. And I think Lou should feel confident that the team is in a good place within the top four in that division. I mean, right now you look at it, they're, you know, I mean, yes, okay, Philly's played four fewer games, but the Islanders are 11 points up on the Flyers, who are in fifth in that division. But I wanted to ask you, so let's stick with the East. We have the Islanders there. We already talked about Washington. They're the top two teams right now. Of the Penguins, Bruins, and Flyers, Brian, who's the team there that you think has the best chance of jumping up and taking maybe that Islander spot or that Capital spot? Who's the team that can go on the run there?
I think it's Pittsburgh because of their schedule. I don't think they've even played the Devils yet, right, Dan? And no. I think they still have six games against Buffalo. I mean, that's a lot of points. Mike Sullivan continues to do a really good – I know they have Crosby, and we'll see what happens with Malkin here moving forward with his injury, but he just continues to find ways to win. That defense isn't the greatest. The goaltending is – I know Jarry has had a pretty good run over the last year and a half, but kudos to Mike Sullivan for the job that he's done in Pittsburgh. So to answer your question, I think just given their schedule, I think the Penguins have the best chance to make a pretty big leap here in the standings.
Yeah, and I don't see much from Philly. I mean, they're one of those teams that's just – been so maddeningly inconsistent. Every time they win a game and you're like, oh, here they come, then they turn around and they can't do anything right in the next game. And Carter Hart hasn't been the player that everybody thought he would be. You know, Brian Elliott might be outplaying him at this point. So you know, I really see that East as a four-team race, and if you look at it that way, who do you think, you know, I think it's a little early, but you can never start thinking about the playoffs too early, who's going to be the biggest nemesis for the Islanders in that draw?
Probably Pittsburgh, just given their schedule. Again, it goes back to the schedule. That's a lot of points for the Penguins.
I meant when we get to the playoffs and you play, you know, the seeds are drawn and it's 1-4-2-3, and wherever the Islanders are, out of those four opponents, who's the one that's scary? Three opponents, who's the one that's scariest to them?
That's a good question. Probably the Bruins, if they find a way in. I know that the Islanders have beaten them four times this year, but playoffs are a different animal. The Bruins can play that same style, right, Sean? So, you know, we'll see what happens. Boston's been a really weird team this past month or so. We'll see what happens. But the Bruins have always given them fits historically. The Islanders have been really good against them. All those games have been at home. We'll see what happens when they play each other up in Boston. But the Bruins, I think, are giving them fits in the playoffs.
The Bruins are a team that really interests me and what Don Sweeney might want to try to do here before the deadline, because he's already been open and honest about their lack of secondary scoring and what's frustrating and whatnot, and how much they do rely, obviously, on the big line and Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak, but they're not scoring a lot. They're just not scoring a lot.
Five on five, too. It's really bizarre.
So, and in the past, when they would go into a slump or they would rely on just this one line, you also had Tory Krug in the back, right? Yeah. I mean, you had some offense coming from the back and you knew you'd rely on your defense. You knew you'd rely on your goaltending. Well, Krug's not there. Rask is hurt. They played Vladar the other day. He was great. 34 saves.
Yeah.
I really wonder what Boston can do here, because they're a team to me, as good as they are, they are playing their way into a bubble team right now, just simply because of their lack of offense.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot past that top line. The top line is absurdly good. I don't think there's any dispute about that, but I think they need more from guys like Charlie Coyle, and Jake DeBrusk has had a miserable season. It's really bizarre, right? So unless those guys really pick up the slack behind that top line, the Bruins could be in trouble, which is crazy because I think they're just too talented not to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and David Krejci hasn't been great for them. Right. Yeah. Like, and you just, again, you wonder, so there's another team, right? We just keep talking about teams that are going to drive the prices up.
Yep.
Like, if Bruins management gets pissed off enough.
Sure.
Like, they're going to spend, because that window for them is tight. Like, people can talk about them trying to retool on the fly.
Yep.
But that top two of that top three and Rask, you know, only have a few years left.
Yeah, and so. I don't think the Bruins will be in the Taylor Hall sweepstakes, but if I'm the Sabres, I'm holding out as long as I possibly can, because they need so much done to their roster to even get back into the bubble mix. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they're so far behind the rest of the pack that I'm holding out as long as I can to get the best package that I can.
We've heard rumors of Kyle Palmieri to Boston for a couple of years now, or at least for a while now. So that one, obviously, with the right wing, the need for a right wing, that one obviously does make some sense too. But Brian, I want to go back to the Islanders. Sure. And what interests me in them is, what are they, 12-0-2 at home and 7-7-2 on a road? Are they that different of a home team versus a road team with no fans in the building?
Not really. I think Lux played a little bit of a role. They've gotten outstanding goaltending all season long, particularly from Varlamov, who I think it should be a Vezina finalist if the season ended today. Knock on wood. Hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully everybody stays safe.
Right, right.
but yeah, they've played really well in their own end. Their goaltending has been really good. I think they've had better games on the road where they haven't gotten the points. I can think of one game in particular at Pittsburgh last month where they were clearly the better team and lost in regulation. So just a couple of bizarre outcomes come playoff time. Hopefully we get more fans in the building and it'll be a more unique, you know, the environment that everybody's been accustomed to forever. This has been so odd for everybody, right, Dan? So we'll see what happens moving forward. But I don't think there's been a huge difference in their play at home as opposed to on the road.
Well, and I think part of it is a testament to Barry Trotz as a coach, right? At home, he gets to dictate what happens. And, you know, as we're preparing to have you on, and I always try and look smart in front of you, Brian, because I hate to disappoint you. So I actually did a little research. And since Barry was hired as the coach in New York, they've had the fifth most points in the league. Behind,
so you are smart. See? Behind, and sometimes. I'm not even blowing smoke. I mean, you're my supervisor, so I can't say you're stupid. But at the end of the day, no, look, Barry Trotz, to me, is he going to win the Jack Adams this year? Probably not. But I still think he's the best coach in the NHL with the work that he's done over the past 3 years and changing the culture and identity of this hockey team completely from day one when he first came in. He's everything that he does. There's a reason behind it. I was talking to David Legwand about him a week or two ago, and anything Barry does, there's a reason behind it. He just doesn't do something for the sake of doing something. And we saw it just this year with Oliver Wahlstrom and Kiefer Bellows. There's a reason for everything. I know fans wanted to see Wahlstrom from the start of the season. He clearly wasn't ready in Barry's eyes, and look at the results now. The guy, just everything he does turns to gold. It's crazy. Yeah.
So You mentioned it. I mean, he's been terrific. Obviously, Lamoriello has been for years. There was this void, right? A leadership void, if you want to call it that. They cycled through coach after coach. Nobody really wanted to go there. Now they got the coach. Now they got the GM, and they're going to get the building. What does that third piece do for the Islanders as a destination team, if you will, with the new building coming too?
I think it's enormous. And you guys know this, players talk. I'm sure, you know, Anders and the rest of the guys, they talk to guys on other teams and they say how great it is. Pageau, I mean, look at Pageau. When's the last time the Islanders got a guy like J.G. Pageau at the deadline who was a pending UFA and signed the same day he was traded to the Islanders? That stuff never happened before. So I think that's a clear-cut sign that things are different around here. I've been to the building already a couple of times. It's going to be outrageous. Dan and I are huge Mets fans. It's literally 10 minutes from City Field.
I haven't been down out there yet. Okay.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes from City Field. It's right on the Queens Nassau County border. So it's going to be amazing. The building's going to be outrageous, and it changes the whole complexion of the franchise, because up until now, I remember talking to Kevin Weeks about this years ago. As an opposing player, you would fly in, you would see the Marriott, you would see an outdated Nassau Coliseum, and then you would leave. You didn't see the golf courses. You didn't see the beaches. You didn't see the rest. You didn't see anything else. You didn't know that Manhattan was a 25-minute train ride from Garden City. You didn't know any of that stuff. So it's a completely different atmosphere around here. Even their practice facility is probably in the top five in the league. It's fantastic. So they're firing on all cylinders right now. It's great to see. It's been a long time coming for this fan base, no question.
Hey, obviously, you know, you cover the Islanders a lot, but you do a lot of other stuff for NHL.com. You watch a lot of games at night when you're handling the writers from all over the league and watch a lot of games. Who's impressed you the most this year, team-wise?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask writer-wise, because then it would be me. Well, but, you know, regardless. Go ahead.
That's a no-brainer. We know.
I would never open that one up. Dan would leave crying.
All right.
Go ahead, Brad.
I think Florida. I think they made a serious jump with really not doing a whole lot to the roster. They made subtle changes. Like Carter Verhaeghe has been fantastic for those guys. And Aaron Ekblad to me is on another level right now. Like, I think he's in the Norris, I think he's in the Norris conversation. That's how good he's been. So, and Barkov, I mean, Sean and I remember doing something on the network talking about Barkov years ago. I think he's even probably five times as good as a couple of years ago. He's just on another level right now. So I think the Panthers are probably the most pleasant surprise in the NHL right now.
Well, we're finally seeing all that talent come to fruition with Joel Quenneville behind the bench. And Bobrovsky's playing better too as he well. So that's got to be key. Bry, this was good, man. Thanks for the insight and for hopping on with us. All right.
Anytime, boys. Be well.
All right, Sean. So you asked Brian, and it was a lot of good stuff there from Brian, the best team in the East. Who's the best team in your mind? Who's the best team in the East in your opinion?
The Washington Capitals. Like, they have everything they need except for goaltending. I don't know where their goaltending is. Vanacek's been great. Samsonov's still coming back from COVID. And you know, you've seen with a couple other goalies, Mackenzie Blackwood, he's just talking about now feeling better after he had it. So they scare me a little bit as a playoff team because I wouldn't want to go into the playoffs with two untested goalies. But right now in the regular season, they are an absolute, absolute battle wagon.
Yep, I agree. I think it's Washington. They beat the Islanders, and they consistently beat the Islanders. They're better than Pittsburgh. Boston's struggling to score right now. I still like the Flyers, but they're, as you mentioned, they're very up and down. So I think it's Washington as well. They win at home. They win on the road. They can score. They can shut you down in ways too. I do question their goaltending. I agree, but I think it's Washington. So anyway, though, I mean, this was fun. Look ahead. We got Marty Biron talking about the Sabres and everything going on there with the firing of Ralph Kruger, Brian Compton on the Islanders in the East. This was a good podcast, Sean. I enjoyed it. Now you can go get your corned beef.
It was worth delaying my St. Patrick's Day festivities. There'll be a little corned beef. There'll be a little Irish music in the future. And I'll just leave everybody with my favorite Irish toast before we go.
All right.
And let everybody know, you know, that may the best days of your past be the worst days of your future.
Wow. We'll leave it at that.
There's
that was terrific.
There's a lot in those 20 words or so.
There's a lot in those words. That was terrific. Everybody enjoy the hockey.